four women, one podcast, and a hard stack of romance novels. Welcome to the Kinky Ladies Book Club. I'm Nicole, here with my fellow deviant ladies of Rooksgrave Manor, Amanda.
Hello.
And Kayla.
Oh, hello.
And sadly, Deonta couldn't join us today. She's been taken to the theater and is having a grand old time. Enjoy the show, Dee. So today we are reading Lady of Rooksgrave Manor by Catherine Moon. And I hope you monster fuckers are ready for this. On the brink of losing her position as a maid with no prospects to go on, the offer of a place at Rooksgrave Manor, a house of ill and unusual repute, sounds like a perfect fit for a young woman with Esther's inclinations. Even better, the invitation comes by the hand of the handsome Dr. Underwood, a delicate gentleman with a ferocious alter ego who knows exactly what he wants from Esther. Upon arrival, the men and the daily decadence of the manor feel too good to be true for a girl of Esther's station. There are rules to be followed, expectations to meet, and Esther is afraid she might be too wicked, even for a place like Rooksgrave. Temptations lurk around every shadowy corner, and Esther has never been a girl able to resist. But the risk of disappointing her new gentleman isn't all that's threatening Esther's new position. Rooksgrave Manor's protections for its unusual patrons are failing. The wards are crumbling, and Esther's new and exquisitely pleasurable life may all come tumbling down.
Oh no, not the wards.
Heaven forbid! The wards. All right, yeah, ladies. So we're gonna be reading a monster fucker gem today.
Oh no! Just kidding. I love monster fucking.
This is sarcastic. Oh no! I'm just excited.
Same. I'm also excited. I'm so excited that I want to get started by reading some reviews with you, ladies.
I have a 2-star that I would like to start with from Jess, who says, "Not a fan, unfortunately." Where was the plot? This series started strong, but as we went along collecting monsters, I just got kind of bored. After a time, it felt like too much of the same thing over and over, and there was just no conflict to create tension or to give that reward slash payoff element. Catherine Moon is an excellent writer, and it was fun to have a fully willing, inquisitive, and sex-positive protagonist, but it was too long with too much smut and not enough plot, conflict, or tension. Fair criticism, I thought.
Yeah. It is a lot of.
I don't know if it's 2-star.
No. But we are collecting monsters like Pokemon here.
I like the title of this one, where it's from S. Gillette. 5 stars. I had to put cream under my eyes because I stayed up all night reading it. Is that the only place you put it? I have always had a hard time reviewing my favorite authors, and Catherine Moon is top 5 for me. I mean, my answer to this is always, it's amazing because Catherine wrote it, but I can see that might not be helpful if you don't know Catherine Moon's work, which is a travesty. You should correct that immediately. Go ahead. I'll wait. You may need a little more to get your curiosity piqued enough to dive in. Number one, it's hot. Number two, it's original. Like, yay, I haven't read a story that made me stay up for 6 hours straight long in a long time. Kind of original. Number three, it's hot. 4, I get so frustrated with the FMCs that change who they are when they find their interests or on their journey. They start as one person and turn into someone completely different when engaging in the relationships. Freaking yuck. Esther stays true to who she is from start to finish, and she does it with consistency and a sense of humor I can get behind. Number 5, it's hot. Number 6, Catherine Moon. Fangirling? Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah, that was like Catherine's personal hype squad.
Yeah, for real, like hardcore fangirl over here.
I haven't read any of her other books, but maybe I should.
The sequel to this one comes out in like a month. Like it's not out yet, but by the time this episode airs, it will be out. So I am tempted to bookmark it for season 4.
I know Deonta's not here, but Catherine Moon did write a book called The Knitter's Guide to Banishing Boyfriends, and I feel like I'm going to send it to her.
I feel like I want
to
read that.
My Kindle, actually, she has a series like that because my Kindle keeps recommending books to me. And it's like one of them's like The Baker's Guide to Something Rituals or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, she has a lot of like witch-based stuff, it looks like.
I have a 3-star review from a Nikita Navalkar. And she says, so, apparently I enjoy monster erotica now? Monster erotic romance? I don't know. You learn something new about yourself every day. It was entertaining and well-written, even though it stretched a bit longer than it needed there towards the 3-quarter mark. It was eye-opening and scorching and strangely sweet. All in all, much fun was had. No further questions, please.
Sometimes no further learning questions. You're into monster porn sneaks up on you, kind of like an invisible man.
Speaking of monster porn sneaking up on you, ladies, are you ready for our plot breakdown of A Lady of Rooksgrave Manor?
How long did it take you to write this outline?
4 hours.
Oh.
But it wasn't like I was concentrating. I was like, I was watching the American Song Contest for like the first hour and a half of it. Like got up to like eat dinner, like sat back down, scrolled through Tumblr a little bit, put some true crime on, and 4 hours later I had a outline. Alrighty. Let's do it. Esther Reed is a maid for a rich household. And she's a thirsty bitch. Everybody knows it. She's got a very unladylike reputation, but she can't help it. This woman loves the D. So the lady of the house, Mrs. Pickering, has often suffered from nervous complaints and bouts of hysteria that needed to be treated by a doctor. Wink, wink, ladies. So whenever the boyishly handsome Dr. Underwood visits, Esther listens at the door to Mrs. Pickering's obvious moans of pleasure, accompanied by such a strange buzzing noise. Whatever could that be? One time, Dr. Underwood opens the door to find Esther all flushed and touching herself out into the hall because she was eavesdropping. They have some like awkward eye contact. It's pretty hot. Sometime later, it turns out that Esther is going to lose her job because Mr. Pickering is a gambler and a prick. He lost all of their fortune. They're losing their house. They're letting all the staff go, Esther among them. While everyone's kind of packing up their things, Dr. Underwood is there roaming the halls. He appears to be looking for something. And Esther's like, oh, he's probably trying to figure out what items he's going to like buy at the auction. But then he finds her. And it turns out he was looking for Esther. And he's like, hey, girl, I think you should come check out my practice tonight. And she's like, oh, are you looking to like have a mistress? Like, I get it. You're like married. You want someone to fuck on the side. It's cool, man. She's like not even a little bit offended by the offer. She's also kind of not wrong. But Underwood's like, oh, no. Like, I'm not married. I don't have a mistress. But I do have a little experiment that I want to try out with you if you're willing. Obviously, Esther's like, hell yeah. She shows up at his practice and he uses his very strange buzzing instrument on her. He has her basically on all fours and he's just taking this very odd, never seen anything like it, ladies, vibrating ball just to her clit. And it's like nothing she's ever felt before, and she loves it. She says, I couldn't control myself, not the way I wanted to grind down onto that red bulb buzzing into my button, nor the rapid, anxious sounds falling out of my open mouth. It seemed a shame God had not thought to gift this to women earlier, to make it possible for a man to do such a thing if we asked him.
I was totally mystified by this part because I had no idea what she was talking about. I've never heard of such a thing before. And yeah, it must be something that they really should invent because I really had No idea. What a mystery that thing is.
It's so fantastic. And did you know that it can be used to treat your hysteria and nervous complaints for your fragile lady minds? Did you know that?
Man, those were the days, okay. Huh?
Very, very Freudian with a side of cocaine.
Mm. My fragile lady mind does need all of the vibrating instruments possible.
To help me with the my...
It's to help me with my hysteria, with my lady problems.
So I don't swoon.
So I don't smother my husband in the middle of the night.
God, isn't this wallpaper yellow? So as Esther gets off, Dr. Underwood does start to kind of appear to get a little bit like rougher and grittier with her. Like at first he's like got this like nervous boyish, like, oh, I'm so polite kind of vibe to him. And then he starts kind of ordering her around to stay bent on her hands and knees. And she notices his eyes start to change color. And he tells her again, not to turn around or look at him as he begins to fuck her from behind. And Esther notes that while he wasn't a big man, his cock grows fuller and bigger as he fucks her even more roughly. And spoiler, Dr. Underwood literally transforms Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde style into Mr. Tanner. And Mr. Tanner fucks Esther hard and rough, and she fucking loves it, to the point where she's literally like, wow, what a great night. I like Dr. Underwood and Mr. Tanner equally well. When
she's very understanding right off the bat.
She is very understanding right off
she's
the
like,
bat.
She's like, this is fine.
Yeah, she's like, this isn't weird at all. When they're finished and Mr. Tanner becomes Dr. Underwood again, we learn that his first name is Jonathan and he offers her a job. He's like, this is basically an audition. You're going to do great. I got a job for you. Esther travels to Rooksgrave Manor, which is somewhere in like the English countryside. It's basically a monster fucker paradise brothel. And the madam, Magdalena, offers Esther a job and a comfortable life to work there. All their patrons are monster men, and Magdalena uses her witchy intuition skills to match willing girls with men who she thinks will blend well with their personalities. She's like a little matchmaker, but with prostitutes and monsters. Esther loves sex and gleefully accepts. Her first night there, she watches a woman outside get fucked by a werewolf. And we see actual like wolf form foreplay before he transforms into a dude. And Esther's like, this is so hot. I'm going to rut against this pillow. But this doesn't actually affect the plot anymore. So I'm going to stop talking about it and jump to the fact that the same night, Esther also has a dream where... Is it the same night? Maybe the next day. Who cares? She has a dream. She's visited by a man with the body of a great cat like a lion with enormous wings and a tail and all this freaky shit. And we learn that this is Amon. He is an Egyptian sphinx who in her dream promises Esther that he will see her soon. And she's his little star that is guiding him across the sea to England so that he can be with her pussy. Weird dream. And Magdalena is like, oh, yeah, BTW, that's Amon. He's your client. You'll meet him soon. But anyway, first up, vampires. Esther's first official client is a wealthy French vampire who's also a pastry chef. So I think Catherine really likes Discovery of Witches and was getting some inspiration there.
Just say, I love him so much, and he's such a nice man.
August the vampire?
Yes.
Yeah, I loved him. I absolutely loved him.
Are you telling me that you are going to make me homemade pastries and then fuck the ever-loving bejesus out of me? Those are my two favorite activities.
Same. I love food, and I love fucking. I want Esther's job.
What kind of pastries?
Oh, the French kind.
Yeah, any kind. There's no such thing as a bad pastry.
The French kind, obvi. Mm-hmm. Also, because this was so like Discovery of Witches, in my head, it was absolutely like Matthew Good as August, which...
Totally down for that.
Absolutely. So yeah, August, the wealthy French vampire who's also a pastry chef, He, upon first meeting Esther, he's like cooked her way too much fucking food. It is like an amazing buffet of deliciousness. And she's like, I can't eat all this. And he's like, sorry, I'm not human. So sometimes I forget my proportion sizes. It's okay. But he gets off on literally feeding her. Like, she like sits in his lap and he like feeds her stuff. And it's, he feeds her like different sweet stuff and other like earthy stuff that he's like, this is going to make your blood taste better when I get to have dinner later. So eat up, babe.
I love when a guy feeds me food. Like, there's this guy I'm seeing, and like when we'd have like dinner dates, he would like bring ice cream, or like he bought me a big old box of cream puffs before. Oh, such a little fat kid.
Sexy.
But like, yeah, like just like pop
hell yeah
in my mouth. Yeah. I'm here for it. Let's go. It's like one of my favorite things.
I love when my husband cooks.
Very sensual, very intimate date nights with dinner and food. But none of the food went on my body. It was always just like, just feeding me kind of thing. So
we're not here to waste sweets. No. All right.
Yeah. No. Don't waste dessert.
August edges Esther a bit. It's kind of like the first experience she's really had with learning patience during sex. And it's pretty hot. August describes her as dreadfully wanton. And, you know, during their lovemaking, he bites her and he drinks blood. And of course, you know, the vampire bites are like orgasmic. Obviously, it's a monster fucker book. So they are slow and steady. And we learn that apparently it's been a long ass time since August has had like a human lover he can also drink blood from, like who's also consenting to the blood drinking thing. And he's like, this is great. He's like, this is the best date ever. We also have one of my favorite quotes here where it says, his cock stood proudly and I was fairly sure that all the blood I'd given him thus far had headed straight in that direction.
Love it.
Loved that. August hangs around for a few days, getting to know her. They fuck a bunch. He notices that Esther kind of fancies one of the house butlers. This butler's name is Booker. He is a literal golem who is a man that was made out of stone and brought to life by Magdalena's witchcraft. And hey, seems like Booker also fancies Esther as well. And although at this point he's a creature of few words, and frankly, I pictured him as Lurch from the Addams Family this whole time. But August lets Esther know that he thinks her wanting to bang Booker is pretty chill and it's hot. And he's like, I would like to watch that. Like, you, like, girlfriend, you want to fuck other dudes? Let me know so that I can watch.
Think we know where this is going.
I think we know where this is going. August is, I would like to say, August is bi as hell, and so into Esther fucking other people in front of him. He's got a fun variety of fetishes. I will say that.
He's really great.
Yeah. So, one night after August leaves, we find that Esther is not alone in her room. A literal invisible man assaults her.
A little bit.
His name is Ezra. He, I think, is Irish, right?
Yeah, he's Irish.
Kind of lose track of them after a while.
He has an Irish accent. I think August has like a Frenchy sort of an accent,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Like old French aristocrat accent.
Bourgeoisie.
And then Ezra has like a, I think she says it's like a Dublin sort of like working man's Irish accent.
He calls her, I mean, literally every time he opens his goddamn mouth, he calls her Pusheen, which apparently means pussycat. And I mean that every time. Like, he can't speak a sentence without saying it. And I'm like, oh my God, you're the only two people in the room. She knows she's fucking talking to her. That drove me, all of the nicknames that she has, I will say, drove me insane. They call her Pusheen and Little Star, Little Something or Other, Little
Ma Petite.
Ma Petite. Like, stop it.
Ma Petite. Do you want
they each have their own. They each have their own cutesy nickname for her.
Yes, but half of them contain the word little. And that's one of my things that I hate in sex books when you're called little something. Like, bitch, I'm not little. I am a full grown ass woman.
I am a thick full course meal over here.
I was going to say, I've been called many things, but little is not one of them.
So Ezra is like a thief who was cursed to be invisible. He's been lurking around the manor and secretly watching Esther get off with August a whole bunch. And he's like, I saw you through your window when you were masturbating to that werewolf and that woman fucking. And I thought you were so hot. I needed to meet you by assaulting you in your bed. And at first, Esther's like, oh no, I'm a little scared, but also I'm horny as hell and keyed up all of the time. And she's like, this is so hot. I'm gonna bang this invisible guy. While they're fucking, Esther thinks it's like super hot to kind of see like how like her body's reacting without anyone else being there. Ezra is also like, also, I swear, I like tried to join the manor as an official patron, but the membership fee is too high and I'm hella broke. So that's why I'm sneaking in here to assault you. Sorry, babe. While they're fucking, though, Esther's like, we're going to do this again. And I want a mirror next time so I can watch this shit. She literally tells him, I want you to sneak up on me and have me without saying a word. So Esther, much like our reviewer Nikita, is discovering things about herself and her kinks in this experience. Of course, they get caught.
Naturally.
Surprise! Amon the Sphinx has arrived early. He is very magical. Part of his magic is that he can, you know, just look like a normal dude. Who, of course, is hot as hell. But he can also, like, see through magic and know things. So he can see that Ezra is just chilling in the room, even though he was trying to hide it. And they were trying to pretend that Esther was just, like, vigorously masturbating instead of fucking an invisible man. Ezra gets kicked out. Amon has a fucking temper tantrum. And Esther feels kind of bad for him. For Ezra, I should say, because she thinks they come from like kind of similar backgrounds as poor kids, and she actually really enjoyed their encounter. But the bigger problem here, Madame Magdalena is like, Ezra shouldn't have been able to sneak into the house. It's protected by magical wards. I set them myself. We shouldn't have people sneaking in. So like, hint, that information is going to be important later. The next day, Esther has a breakfast date with Amon, and he's a jealous prick.
He's a sphinx,
yeah. He's able to shift his form, as I said, but he does keep his little, like, kitty cat tail through quite a bit of it, and Esther's into that. But he's also super selfish, and he wants Esther all to himself, and he decides to punish her with denial for fucking somebody else without his permission. Red flag, but whatever. So Amon literally chains Esther to a table and edges her for literal hours. She asks how long, and he's like, I lost track after 2 hours, babe. So he doesn't let her come for 2+ hours while he's like playing with her clit, eating her out, doing all sorts of kinky stuff and just pulling away at the last second till she's literally sobbing. And when she can't take it anymore, he just plows right into her and she comes instantly. He growled, cutting me off with a soft press of a blunt cock at my entrance. My voice evaporated in one desperate gasp, and then he was pushing in. I came with the briefest brush against my clit, my shout delirious and relieved, pained and pleasured all at once. I was swollen from being toyed with for so long, fingered and licked and then ignored as I ached, and Amon seemed especially full inside of me. And then almost immediately after that, she's like, what the fuck? Because she feels that something's not quite normal, or human, I should say, with his penis. And every time he pulls back, he doesn't leave her. She's like feeling that he's like pulling against her, and she's like, what the fuck is like banging up against my pelvis, man? And he's like, oh, Yeah. I've got a hook on my cock, and it's so that while we're fucking, you know, we don't come apart. And ladies, can we take a guess? Does Esther like this?
Of course she does.
Of course she does. She's super into it. So into it that later on she goes around asking all the other ladies in the manor if they've got like guys with weird hooked cocks too. There's a whole like there's a whole paragraph about all of the different penises these women encounter.
Is this when she like asks, she like asks about the penis and he's like, oh yeah, if you don't like it, I don't have to do it if it like makes you uncomfortable or whatever. And she's like, oh no, no, it's great. You can continue with the hook penis. That's great. Thank you.
And he also, when he fucks her and he's got like the hook and he's like, we ain't coming apart till I come now. You're stuck this way. He tells her that I will teach your body about this pleasure it supposedly craves so much, which I think was pretty hot because he goes from orgasm denial to not letting her stop coming for a ridiculously long amount of time. But we're 25% into the way of this book, and I have a note here that's like, how are we going to escalate this from here? Like, we're getting pretty...
We are, though.
We are. We are. So it's pretty darn clear that Amon does not like Ezra. But, you know, Esther pleads for his case. She's been so smitten with all of her boys so far and is kind of miffed at Amon's insistence that she deserves to be treated better than having an invisible man sneak into her bedroom and fuck her without her permission in the middle of the night.
Completely unreasonable, Amon.
Completely unreasonable. He tells her that she should be treated like a queen, but she's like, I'm not a queen. I'm just some poor girl who really likes to fuck. Woe is
Esther. Isn't that what we all are?
Yeah, we're inside. All poor girls who love to fuck on the inside.
Deep down.
That rejected titles for this podcast of poor girls who love to fuck.
Love to fuck. They wouldn't have let us on Apple, I don't think, if that was the title of this.
Esther loves to fuck. And she wants to get fucked by the help. One morning, as Booker is helping Esther dress, he fingers her with his literal stone finger until she comes. And then he promises her that they go and do this every morning. Esther's cool with
it. Beautiful way. Beautiful way to start the day.
Beautiful way to start the day.
You need your Folgers. You need your Wheaties. And you need a stone finger making you come every morning.
Every morning. As you get dressed.
Yes.
Esther is a little disappointed because she thinks that she's not exciting Booker, wink, wink, as much as he excites her. And when she's a little concerned about it, he like literally flips a switch to on, just instant marble dick standing at attention. And he's like, no worries. I am good to go whenever you need, babe. Which again, Esther's like, fuck yeah, she's living her best life. So, Esther's next official client is a water demon. She goes to a grotto under the house and is like lured into this pool. And at first, she's like, I don't know how to swim, but my other clients have been great so far, so I'm going to trust this guy. And the water itself does seem to be, like, caressing and pleasuring her. And she can, like, feel it everywhere. And then it's like, psych, it's drowning time. So she's pulled under the water. And she hears this, like, eerie voice being like, I will take you to, like, our master. And then...
I'm sorry, what was that?
I don't think I caught that. I'm sorry.
You're just going to have to turn the volume up when you listen back. So she gets dragged under the water as the water is literally pulling her under and also literally raping her. It's going up into her hooch. She blacks out. She's close to drowning. And then it turns out When she regains consciousness, she has been rescued by none other than Ezra, that sneaky invisible devil. And when she comes to, all of her pretty boys are there. We have Ezra, August, Booker, Amon, and Mr. Tanner all chilling in her bedroom. And they are so relieved that Esther is safe, that August and Jonathan literally fought over which one could pay the membership fee to have Ezra officially join the club in gratitude. And August wins. The rich French boy wins. And he becomes like Ezra's sponsor in like a, I don't know, Miss Havisham kind of way. They are also collectively hella pissed off that a water wraith and not a demon got in. But honestly, what's the difference? Because they both sound dangerous and fuckable. So shrug.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, what is the difference between a water demon and a water wraith? And why can one get in and one not get in?
What? Why would it make a difference anyway in the lore of the story? Because we never go back to this again.
Yeah.
Whatever. But anyhow, this wraith tricked Magdalena into thinking he was just a demon.
Which, like, she's like an all-powerful witch who, like, runs this whole place and has all these wards, and she can't.
She was just like, distracted, I guess. So, I don't know.
I guess.
They do say that the wraiths are, like, illusionists, but also, like, I'm sure if a wraith came to the house and went, I got money, I want to get my dick wet, pun intended, I'm sure after a not very thorough application process, he would have been allowed in. But everyone's mad at Magdalena for this having happened to Esther because she's supposed to be protected. And Magdalena's magic shit is supposed to keep bad boys out. And now...
Rightfully so, yes, I think.
Rightfully also. At first, Esther's like, oh, are they all mad at me for, like, jumping into the water? And then she was like, oh... Oh, no, they're all mad at Magdalena because they like me so much. The boys are mad and they're bickering, of course, over how Esther, who's clearly in more danger than all of the other girls who work here, should be protected. And Amon is being the biggest butthead of them all, which Esther does not enjoy because he refers to her as his property. And Jonathan and August go on ahead and proceed with a planned weekend getaway to London, saying that Esther is going to be safe and protected with them, and it'll give Magdalena a chance to do some, like, magic bullshit while they're away. Cool, fine. Everyone kind of reluctantly agrees. In London, August and Jonathan dote on Esther. And they act like, you know, they're a couple of regular pals, if you know what I mean, gals. They are wink, wink, just such good friends, just boys being boys, hanging out with each other. So friendshiply.
Just gals being pals.
Just gals being pals. They have such a friendship, these two.
Very close friendship.
Very close friendship. And Jonathan explains the origins of Mr. Tanner, who was at first just a voice in young Jonathan's head, till an experiment made him, like, physically manifest as an entire another person, transforming Jonathan's body. They do try their best to find a balance between each other and, you know, their respective kinks. Jonathan and August also take Esther to a monster-run theater. It's called the Company of Fiends, which is a great name. And before the performance, they make it explicitly clear to Esther that everything she is about to watch is consensual and just a performance. And she's like, okay, what is that supposed to mean? And then the show starts off with a scene of a damsel in distress being chased and captured and fiendishly tortured by a pair of werebears that just tie her down and just eat her out and fuck her raw. Just like really tortured, really. Esther loves it. Of course she fucking loves it. She's like, oh my God, why didn't I ever think to, like, work for a place like this before Rooksgrave? The highlight, though, of the performance for Esther is when a Japanese tentacle monster, like, fucks five women at once from a giant fish tank.
I know this is mostly not a visual medium, but my eyebrows are doing lots of bouncing up and down in a delighted sort of way.
Yeah, I had a pause worked into my notes for Amanda's comments after.
I'll move my bangs so you can see them.
Yeah. Well, I wore
wiggle up and down.
I wore my tentacle shirt in honor of this scene today.
Love it.
Yeah.
The Amanda eyebrow wiggle.
The Amanda eyebrow wiggle for the
only for the tentacles.
The tentacle D. As the show is unfolding, Jonathan, August, and Esther are in their own private box. And, of course, they're fucking around. Esther gives Jonathan a hand job, and he comes in her hand. And August goes down on her and eats her out. She's, like, real frustrated. She can't get out of the corset in this fancy-ass dress, by the way. And then he fucks Esther's mouth, as she puts it, and she really wants to be fucked. She wants cock in her pussy. But they're like, oh no, baby, we're not gonna do that right now. We're just gonna tease you because, surprise, act three is the audience participation round. And they ask Esther if she would like to volunteer, because Jonathan has this new device using electricity, and she cuts him off and just goes, yes. And he's like, what? He's like, don't just say yes before I've finished my sentence. You don't know what I'm about to say. And she's like, no, yes, yes. I wanna fuck on the stage. So they do. Once on stage, Esther is strapped to an electric chair-ish kind of device. And Jonathan uses some electric rods to stimulate her with electricity, and they're mixing pleasure and pain, and all the while he's giving a lecture on how, with a delicate and highly regulated use of gentle stimulation, I can manipulate her body into spasms of pleasure with no other touch on my part. Which is, Esther's like, I don't understand how this is gonna work, and then she gets cattle prodded into orgasming. She gets
delightful.
She gets so wet at some point that Jonathan's like, oh look, liquid stimulates electricity. Zap. And makes her come. This is
zap.
Zap. Yeah.
Zap. 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 Zap.
I don't think in reality I'm into like electric play like this. But this was pretty hot because he's like, I'm going to zap you here. I'm going to zap you here. And on the third time, you're going to come. And she's like, what? And he's like, no, watch me. And she comes. She's happy.
She does. Yeah, the electroshock orgasm is out of my realm of kinkiness, I think. But to each his own, man. Not here to yuck your yums. You want to zap yourself to kingdom come. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, not a vibe for me.
Well, it's a vibe for Esther, and she vibes hard. And after Jonathan makes her come on the electric machine, he transforms into Mr. Tanner and fucks her from behind on that stage. Esther is actually insistent that she turn around and they get to fuck face to face for the first time, because she realizes that he's actually got some like insecurities over her seeing what he actually looks like, because he is hella ugly, as she describes it. And he's like big and so weird looking, and about his dick, she says, Christ, if I'd seen it before, I never would have believed we'd manage the act. It was pulsing and dark, weeping with white fluid, the tears of arousal running down into the curls at the base.
Yum.
Yum. But they bone first face to face for the first time. And it's actually a kind of a tender moment for them, because it's like this, like, oh, you know what? You don't have to be ashamed. I'll fuck you face to face, man.
Yeah.
And then she rides him cowgirl style and gets a standing ovation. What a performance.
A standing O.
The standing means boner and the O means orgasm, because we're funny.
This is a comedy podcast.
This is a comedy podcast.
This is why we rank in comedy. It's just gold right here.
We rank like Chile.
Comedic genius over here.
No, we ranked in comedy in Greece once. So thank you to all of our listeners in Greece. Thank you all
for Greek listeners.
Thanks. Really appreciate that. But as the climax of the show happens, because I'm funny, Esther notices one massively creepy ass dude in the audience. He's giving her weird vibes. He looks hella sketchy. He's like got this like weird thing where she's like, his face doesn't look quite right. Like it's not really there. And August and Mr. Tanner notice it too. And they just whisk her away. And then in a carriage, we learn that this creeper's name is Bersha. And he is the former king of Gomorrah, like from the Bible.
Total sense.
He's the one who presumably sent the wraith after Esther. Because he just hates it when other people are having too much of a good time. That is his whole evil plan.
I mean, it fits in with the whole Gamora thing, doesn't it?
Yeah. So it is a mystery to everyone how this apparent human became immortal. But it's no mystery that he is one twisted motherfucker. And he basically runs a house like Rooksgrove that's more like Hostel meets Saw with their clientele. They get off on like rape and torture porn and snuff stuff. And he hates Rooksgrave and houses like it because everything there is just too damn consensual. What a meanie.
Like the opposite of this podcast.
Yeah. He's our nemesis.
We're not having him as a guest.
We're not having
him. Don't worry. As a guest.
Esther is safe for the night. She spends it at Jonathan and August's place. You know, the home that these two boys just being pals seem to share together. And she wakes the next morning, snuggled alongside Jonathan, and she decides to wake him with a blowy. And as she's sucking him off, he's like, I need to fuck you right now because Mr. Tanner is sleeping. And normally he's the one who calls the shots when our dick is out, but he's asleep. So I'm going to fuck you right now. And then we have another one of my favorite quotes, which is, this was nice. No, nice was when a lad had the sense to hunt for your clit a little to make sure it felt decent for you too, as well about his business of getting off. This was lovely and sweet. Jonathan rose onto his knees, finding a new angle that sapped me of my strength and sanity, and I cried out his name in thanks.
Wow.
I enjoyed that.
So nice.
Esther here does find that she is growing attached and has a lot of genuine affection for these men at this point. And she's enjoying her lessons in both physical and like emotional intimacy that she's having with them because she's never really had a relationship or anyone who's like super cared about her or that she could be emotionally intimate with. So this is all new to her and she likes it. And in their afterglow, Jonathan suggests they go wake up August in the same way together. So she's like, oh, but he sleeps during the day and he's like, he has like a hidden room because he's a vampire. And Jonathan's like, I know where his hidden room is. So
Jonathan
travel to this like secret room behind a bookcase, I think it is, where August sleeps during the daylight so he can be safe. Jonathan explains to Esther that August will be very hungry when he wakes up. He always is. And she's like, how do you know this? And he's like, well, you know, as friends, I have occasionally helped August out with these thirsty needs of his as friends, ladies. Just two more bros being bros.
Two bros biting each other in the dark. You know how it goes.
Two bros.
You know how it goes.
Like two guys in a hot tub.
Just two guys.
6 feet apart.
This is the funniest thing about this too, because like this book is just so like open and chill with the monster consent, but we really pussyfoot around all of the gay stuff. Like, yeah. As far as like naming it, like, you know, we get it. You guys are in a relationship. Like, okay.
It's fine.
It's fine. So despite needing to slumber during the daylight, August's cock is still very much responsive, and Esther straddles him. It's a little, well, more than a little, it's a lot problematic, but whatever. She gets him hard and rides his dick while he's vampire unconscious. And she says, "My eyes fell shut, lips curling as I sighed and sank onto August's cock. I toyed with myself as I worked him into me, swirling my finger over my clit, plucking my nipples, gripping my breasts, and my eyes opening to admire the sight of sleeping August. He really was helpless like this, and it made my heart pang at the thought that anyone might be able to harm him in this state." Like, you know how you're raping him,
how
whatever.
You're just like, yeah. Anyone might be able to sneak in here and ride his dick without his explicit permission. That is a thing that could happen in this state. Weird.
She's pinching her nipples like, wow, terrible for him as she's riding him.
Jesus Christ.
Meanwhile, Jonathan, too, is like basically sitting there, like rubbing himself, being like, "I was like, does that he feel good, baby? Do you like that? Do you like that, you dirty girl? Yeah, I bet he feels good." And then suddenly, August wakes up. And he's fucking hungry and feral and just pins Esther against the ceiling, fucks her real hard, sinks her fangs real deep into her neck. They all come. And when they fall back onto the bed, Jonathan climbs on up there, all hard and poised to take August from behind. And Esther's the one who's like, who encourages the threesome that they're about to have. We have that, August's muscles were unwinding, his body squirming and needy between us, and I braced my heels on the bed, stroking his back as I rocked up onto his length. August's eyes rolled back as he trembled with pleasure as I ground my clit against him, my own body jerking. Jonathan was the one really in control, that cool mask of the doctor back on his face as he manipulated August into a whimpering frenzy. "Fuck him," I hissed to Jonathan. "I want the both of you pinning me down." If anyone's wondering, August is having the best wake-up call of his entire own life.
I enjoy, like, threesomes, foursomes, reverse harems, all of those so much more when the boys are also sleeping with each other. I don't want them all just fucking the girl. I need also the boys to be fucking.
I love that too. It's going to be a huge surprise to everyone that this was my favorite out of the like multiple sex, like the
me too,
the group orgy scenes. There are multiple orgy scenes. This one was my favorite.
Me too.
Yeah, it was great.
I love a two dudes and a girl.
Yeah. And I loved the scene of like Esther's on her back and they're basically both kind of like being plowed into her that way. Mm-hmm. And then August is again having his best, living his best life, getting railed from behind and fucking Esther. And he's like, "I want to wake up like this all the time. You guys are the best. You guys are the best friends ever.
The American dream."
Yeah. After they have sex, August is like, he's like, "Esther," he's like, "why don't you show Jonathan how to suck my cock?" And then Jonathan's like, "Oh, babe, sweet of you to think Esther's that good. But also bold of you to assume I don't know or you know how to suck your cock real good." He says that medical school was very thorough.
You know how medical schools are.
You know how Victorian medical schools are.
Although, to be fair, everyone I know who went to medical school had a wild time. So they work hard, play hard there.
Work hard, play hard.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my favorite sex scenes, if you're surprised, because I was. When they return to the manor, surprise, Ezra is visible again. But it's not like his default setting. He's only visible when he concentrates real hard. This is courtesy of Magdalena. She did some wishy shit, so he could be visible when he wants to be. There's also some shit about how there are similar houses out there to Rook's Grave, and they're like banding together to protect the girls from possible attacks from this Bersha fucker, but like, whatever, I don't care. Esther slowly begins to realize she's falling in love with all of these men. And the boys plan a surprise for her. They have a lovely dinner party with several other girls from the manor and their respective patrons. And then they have a lovely little orgy for dessert. So first Ezra fucks her, and like the sitting room that they're in is just mesmerized by Esther moaning and being pleasured in front of a mirror by like this seemingly nothing. And just how pretty much open and gaping she is, because no one can see Ezra's cock just sliding on into her. And then the real surprise is that Esther gets to ride Booker's stone dick for the first time, which she describes as having ridges, almost like curves and ropes of muscles, and a fat, flared head that curved into a gentle tip that would be easier to take at the start. There at the base of him were carved white curls streaked with gray veins of marble. Come to think of it, Magdalena was much better at cock than God. Why weren't all men shaped so?
I think this is my favorite scene of the entire thing, personally.
A pretty good one. So Esther here is a fucking Booker, I believe. August is getting off on watching real hard. And it turns out that he has like a possessiveness and like jealousy kink. And he is getting off on calling her like wicked. And he wants her to scream that Booker's got the best cock that she's ever had. And he's like, yeah, tell me that Booker fucks you better than I do. And she loves it, of course. But then afterward, she's like, oh, I guess so, like that like a jealousy thing there. And he's like, oh, yeah, I can tone that down if you want. He's like, you know, I would never be like stopping you or really like jealous or cruel or anything. He's like, I just kind of get off on the dirty talk of it. And she's like, all good, man.
I think this is the one where she is fucking Booker, and then August comes in the back, and then she, in the middle of it, starts sucking Ezra's cock. No? Is that a different one?
No, that later? You know what? That might be this one, because there is a different one where Ezra's fucking her while Jonathan's got the vibrator on her clit and she's sucking Booker's cock. So I think this is
the one you're talking about. The DP.
Yeah.
One, I think, which I really liked. There's a lot of like good girl praise kink stuff in this particular scene, which I was very much into.
I love me. I got a praise kink.
Love me a good girl, let me tell you.
Love it. So the next morning, Esther wakes cuddled with her babes, but she finds that Booker's acting kind of odd. Which is a little bit of an understatement because he tries to strangle her. So Bersha has possessed Booker, like, because Booker's like a golem, so he like doesn't like have like a, I guess, soul or anything like that. I don't know. There's like some magic shit, and Bersha possesses Booker. And he tries to use Booker to kill Esther. Booker, with Esther's encouragement, she like touches him and gives him a kiss, but he's able to have a strong enough will to push the evil out, and, you know, to protect themselves from this ever happening again. Magdalena uses some witchcraft to permanently tie Booker's like will to Esther, so she would kind of like be his master, I guess, if they ever went that route, but it's just so he doesn't get possessed again. They never really do anything with that. Let's see, there's more sex, more cuddling, more of Amon eating her out. Ezra invisibly fucks her and you think like a closet while some people are waiting for Esther to come outside. That one's really hot. But I'm going to skip to the most important part next, which is Amon actually shows some humility and invites the whole gang over for dinner to his crazy ass mansion. So while we're there, the Fab Five pretty much propose to Esther, saying that if...
Five.
Yeah, why not? Which one's Jonathan? So,
I don't know.
So they basically propose to her. They're saying that if she's willing, they all agree to live like Brady Bunch style together, all move in together and live happily ever after. They're like, we just want to be with you. We want to fuck you. We're not trying to like tie you down. Like whatever life you want to live, we're here for you, girl. But like, we just want to be with you. And they're like, no rush. You can stay at like the manor as long as you want. Just know we love you and we want to make this six-some work. And Esther accepts. Happy day. They celebrate with an orgy. This is another one where I do kind of lose track of who's fucking who. But I know that at one point Ezra is inside of her while Jonathan is vibing on her clit with the machine. Ezra is like, oh, fuck, I can feel that down to my balls. This thing's great. And then Booker fucks her mouth. And she is the whole time, she's like screaming, more, more, more. And Amon is like, oh, you're going to have more. You're going to have more than you ever imagined. More than I can give you alone. Just as it should be, baby, because we love you so much. Before the sun comes up, August leaves. Turns out Amon's home isn't suitable to protect vampires from sunlight. So he goes back to the safety of Rook's Grave for the day. When the rest of the gang the next day, like next afternoon, return to the manor, gasp, it's on fire. Bersha has sent some fire demon minions into the house. They gained access because some fairy bitch let them in. I don't know. Whatever. They set the manor on fire. People are dying. Everyone's screaming. And August, along with several other vampires, we learn are still inside. Esther is frantic and terrified. And she's like, why isn't anyone trying to help August or the vampires escape? And unfortunately, it's Mr. Tanner who's like, it's daylight, Esther. If we even tried to bring August out of the house, it would kill him because of the sunlight. He's like, so the best we can do is hope that like the little underground cave where the vampires sleep will be untouched by the fire. How sad. Booker and Ezra, though, do run into the blaze to try and help, but only Booker returns. They say that the a tunnel collapsed that leads to the hidden room in the basement, presumably trapping both Ezra and August inside. Whoa, drama. When the flames finally burn out, Esther ventures into the manor to try and help with rescue efforts. Bit of it is sad. She hears August's voice like calling to her through the tunnels, Esther. And she dashes into the tunnels. She becomes lost, like, immediately, of course. And then we realize that it's a trap. August has been gagged and bound by stakes. He's clearly been tortured and is bleeding. And surprise, it's Bersha. Bersha evil monologues. He's like, I'm going to eat all of this vampire's organs. And it's going to be yummy as hell. And then I'm going to kidnap you, Esther, and I'm going to rape you until I break your spirit and shit. And Esther's defense is literally like, do it, you won't. And he's like, no, I will. I'm like going to rape you. She's like, no, I might get off on it. So like your big plan is that you want to have sex on me? I love sex. This is going to be hot. And he's like, what? No, that's not. He's like, that's not what I meant. I didn't want to. That's not the point. The point is to like break you. And she's like, no, I'm like so into it. You should try this consent thing. I promise you it's better. Like, it's great. And she's like, her whole defense is like, you could try to rape me, but I'm into some kinky shit. And she basically is like, you're just being a sourpuss because everybody else around you is having a lot of fun and you don't like it. So, so as she's like stalling with this very strange defense, she feels Ezra's invisible hand push a knife into her hand. And she uses it to shank the fuck out of Bersha.
We love it. You love to see it.
I love to see it, but I'm also like, why didn't Ezra just do that himself?
Anyone's going to do shanking, it's going to be Ezra.
Right. Like, and he's invisible. And we've already established earlier in the book that when he picks up items like his clothing, they also become invisible. So I don't know why he didn't just pick up the knife and shank Bersha and like let Esther be in that much trouble. Whatever. It's fine. She gets the shank. I get it. Yeah. He gets away. Bersha gets away in like a puddle form. Like he's the fucking Terminator from Terminator 2. Like just puddles out.
Pulling under doors. Yeah. Turning himself into a giant knife.
Alex Mack. But I guess he leaves just in time for the sequel, you know? So, you know, the other men arrive and they want to get everybody out of the house before like some other dangerous shit happens. But it's the sunlight and they need to smuggle August out. But it's like nearly dawn. And at dawn, he not only will get like burned by sunlight, but he's gonna like pass out. Like he can't physically stay awake. So Amon finally stops being such a selfish little bitch and like uses his royal sphinx magic to bestow the power of like Wesley Snipes on to August and allows him to walk in the sunlight and not fall asleep during the day, which is a thing he could have but never mentioned before in the book.
Bestow the power of Wesley Snipes.
They all go to Egypt and live happily ever after. They're like, we need to go somewhere safe. Let's go to Egypt. Ezra's like, I never traveled. Can we all go? And August is like, I can walk in the sunlight now. And Jonathan is all like, well, instead of maintaining my practice, I'm going to perform more experiments and kind of research how Bersha was eating vampire organs, if maybe that's why he's immortal. And Booker and Ezra are just like, we'll come too. So, they all go live happily ever after in Egypt. And at least once they toss around the idea of like making Esther a vampire and having Amon do his little magic thing to her so that they can all live together forever. And they're happy.
The end. There's so much sex in this book.
So much sex. I skipped sex scenes. Like, I skipped some stuff in here because I was like, oh, we ain't got time for that.
It was a little long. And the plot was, like, a little drawn out there. Like, the whole Bersha thing. Like, you get through most of the book without much happening in the way of that.
Yeah.
But I liked it. There was plenty of sex. I thought the sex was good. Mm. Yeah, I liked it. I would recommend it, I think.
For all your monster fucker needs. I liked it a lot. I actually thought that we've read better sex scenes. Like, I thought Neon Gods had some better individual sex scenes that were hotter in my opinion, and some from like How to Kill an Incubus I thought were also hotter than these, but I still really liked them. It's still gonna in my like top books for this season.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. Yeah, I could have done with 80 less pages, probably condensed it a little bit. Also, this is a really stupid and Amanda specific criticism, but I would like the monsters to be a little bit more monstery. Only one of them had a weird dick. The vampire is basically just a guy.
I mean, there was the invisible thing. The invisible thing. Two of them had a weird dick, though. Amon and Booker had weird dicks.
Okay, Booker's got a stone dick. Yeah. Sure. Okay. There was the tentacle scene, which I appreciate. But maybe one of the guys in the reverse harem could have had a tentacle dick. I don't know. Very specific criticism.
The sequel is about one of the actresses in that theater company.
Uh-huh.
So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right. I can get down with that.
I demand more weird dicks.
Demand more tentacles and more weird dicks. The weirder the dick, the higher my rating.
What about you, Kayla? What did you think of it?
I'm not really a monster person, but it was okay. Yeah.
Well, Amanda and I will take this party.
You guys will take the party.
Over to okay. Rook's Grave for all of our monster fucking fun times.
I have a quote that I would like to read.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
From the threesome. Oh, August, Booker, I feel as though I can't breathe, I gasped. Booker's hands slid between us, helping themselves to my breasts and lifting me off his chest a little, shifting the stroke of them nestled together inside of me. You're so tight, I'm afraid to move. Does it hurt, ma petite? August murmured, sucking softly on my shoulder. I shook my head and then started to shift, the pair of them echoing me slowly, one pushing in as the other eased out, rubbing themselves together as they stole my breath. That's it. Yes, August hissed, nipping at my throat. I cursed through gasping breaths, the feeling so intense it left me almost numb. Good girl, Esther. Good girl. The praise rushed through me and my body clenched on them, my eyes widening and staring at the wall.
That's hot. I also don't remember if I mentioned this is public sex that they're having, by the way. There is like a shitload of people watching.
There's like a girl fucking a minotaur sort of dude bringing it on back to the minotaurs, and they like everyone stops to like look at them, be like, what's going on over there?
The she leaves and the minotaur guy just starts jerking off because he was like, well, okay, I wasn't done. But there's also a whole subplot in here about like the token mean bitch who works at this manor, and it has no effect on the plot of this book, so it was not worthy of my recap. That's the kind of thing we could have cut out from, like, unless that ends up being crazy important for the sequel. I don't think we needed any of that weird, like, subplot. We could have cut all that out and saved us some time. Overall, ladies, how wet did this monster fuckery menagerie make you?
I almost drowned in the grotto, just being pulled under, you know, couldn't even breathe. Just so wet. It's all in the lungs.
R.I.P.
It's dangerous. Dangerously wet to the point of drowning. You're right over there, Kayla?
You having a hard time, Kayla?
Oh, my goodness. I don't think I'm at that point. I mean, the vampire stuff is fun. I think that's, like, as far as I go with, like, monster stuff. I don't even know how I'd rate that compared to that. But not that crazy. Nice warm bath with no drowning.
Can't really go wrong with a nice warm bath.
With less drowning.
I'll say that I am as wet as I need to be to trigger a shockingly good orgasm by Dr. Underwood's electric dildo cattle prod. That's as wet
Electric
as I
Electric Dildo Cattle Prod. Good band
good
name.
Good name for a band. But yeah, no, I liked this. I'm going to keep it on my Kindle. And I'm probably going to read the sequel. And chances are, I'm going to make the rest of you read the sequel too.
Next season on the Kinky Ladies Book Club. Sorry, Kayla.
It's okay.
But would you gals like to play a game of Would You Rather?
I would love to.
Of course you would.
We don't really have a choice, so.
So, would you rather work for the manor as the high-end prostitute to some monsters that you might get, like, matchmaker set up with a witch? Or the Fun Monster Theater Company that had werebears, literal like demons, and a Japanese tentacle monster. Take your pick.
So hard, because I'm not really a public sex person. I do like the idea of werebears and tentacles. But if I was working at the manor, they would know what I wanted. So Magdalena is really good at matching people with the right people. So I feel like she might be able to get me tentacles if I wanted.
That's true.
She would know how to hook a girl up.
She knows how to hook a girl up.
Just don't, I mean, her judgment, I don't know if we can totally trust because the whole water wraith
thing.
That's
true.
But
I almost want to say theater company because I feel like they have more free time.
They probably do.
That's more like a job than it is like living in a house and doing this 24/7, right?
There's a part of
Esther. Esther doesn't really like go anywhere or do anything without her reverse harem guys.
And it's a lot of work. Like, this is another thing where I'm reading all this going like, oh my God, it's great that your six or something boys want to dote on you and fuck you all the time. And they're going to, you know, work out their weird custody battle with you. But like, that's maintaining six relationships. Two of them are literally with the same body. And that is so much work.
I have exactly one husband and he already talks too much for me. I actually, in the car today, turned to him and I said, talking so much today. And he was like, yep. I was like, okay. So I can't imagine six of them trying to talk to me all the time.
Too much talky, talky, talky.
A lot of talking. I like my alone time. I think I'm going to go theater company.
I mean, that's not the type of performance career I was aiming to get into. Neither, preferably. But of course, we all know how this game works.
We know how this works.
I guess the theater company. I don't know.
You can be in the same theater company.
Okay.
I'll give you all the normal penises.
Oh, thanks.
You can be my understudy if you want.
I just like sit on the sidelines and just like wait for you to have a sick day, but and mm-hmm. a sick day never comes.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to go with the manor, I think. It's a comfortable life. Like, I know that I get my own room and bathroom. Like these men are going to buy me presents all the time. And
it is true. They do like to give presents.
Magdalena also kind of knows, like, your vibe, like your tolerance. Because there are ladies in the manor who only have one guy. Like, there is a woman who fucks an incubus and they're like, yeah, that's her only dude. If she knows, you might only get hooked up with just like maybe one or two. And not all of them are going to want to be in a hexagonal relationship with each other. So
that is fair. She does get a bunch of boys who really want to be with her all the time and love her so very much. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not everyone's vibe.
Maybe it's not. Maybe some of it is more just hit and run type of sex. She got two guys answer. Who were like literally already in a relationship together by like the time they met her. So,
yeah.
Well, if you put it like that, then I guess the job at the manor.
Yeah. I think I'd be happy with either one.
It's true.
But I call my job and tell them that I quit because I have to go work at a monster brothel?
I would quit my job to work at that monster brothel.
Me too.
All right, next question.
They make more too.
Oh, what? Room and board included.
Mm. And they get presents.
And they get presents.
And presents. I am a material girl. Let me tell you.
Half of them get pretty womaned out of there anyway. Magdalena was like, yeah, half the time these guys like propose to these ladies and they go fuck off and marry each other. Like,
beautiful. They've got to be rich. We know the whole thing's expensive to get into.
Yeah. Ezra wasn't even supposed to be there. He just fucked on in. And it happened to work
out.
His way
into a membership.
Literally.
You've got money and a weird dick. Give me a call.
Magdalena knows what you want.
Put that on your dating profile if you had one. Yeah. But you don't, you're married, so.
That doesn't mean I can't have one.
Hey, I don't know what your guys'
situation. Okay, next question. Would you rather the electro kink show scene or the strapped, chained, I should say, to a table for 2+ hours of orgasm denial?
Really just don't think I'd be into the electricity.
Yeah, no, I'm not vibing with the electric current.
I am into edging, but I don't know if I'm into two plus hours of edging.
It's going to hurt at that point. It's just going to hurt.
But you know what else hurts? Being electrocuted. Orgasm denial table, final answer.
I'll take orgasm denial for 600, please.
I'm going to do the same. I can make that. We can make that work. So long as you do remember to water me while I'm strapped to the table.
Yeah, I need like one of those like hamster water bottles next to me so that I can lick the little metal ball to get some water.
Maybe you'll get a hooked penis afterward. All right, last one, ladies.
Oh, geez.
Less of a would you rather and more of like the in order of who would you rather. Out of our five monster boys, we have Dr. Underwood and Mr. Tanner, August the Vampire, Ezra the Invisible Man, Amon the Sphinx, and Booker the Golem. How would you rank them in the order of who you'd want to fuck?
Vampire first. Booker. Is it just fuck or like be with and hang out with?
Fuck. Just a fuck.
Okay. August, Booker, Amon, Ezra, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Okay. Kayla.
Sorry. So those are too many pain. People to rank. Yeah,
that was like you got a brain freeze there.
A lot of moving parts. A lot of hooks.
Just one.
Vampire. Just sign me up for Vampire Boy. I don't care about the other ones.
Don't know. Any order. We got Vampire Boy first. What next?
Invisible Man might be fun.
He's still just human.
Okay, then yeah, there we go. I'm sorry.
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, still mostly human.
Yeah, we can go with that guy for third then.
And you've got a variety of penises and toys.
Mm-hmm. And then who's left?
It's Booker and Amon.
It's Booker and then Amon. We'll just go with that.
Okay.
Putting the weirdest penis last. All right. All right. Fine. Whatever floats your boat, Kayla. Come on.
Clearly not weird looking penis.
Also going to have to go with August as the first one. He was clearly the best out of all of them.
So sweet.
Yeah. I'm going to go, I think, with Amon afterward. He's got a weird penis and really likes to eat you out. Then I'm going to have to go with Underwood and Tanner. Because that could be spicy. Plus a variety of toys. And I like that.
Spicy.
I love an inventive man.
Yeah. As Ezra from there, because that their mirror fantasy could be hot. And then Booker, because Booker was the only one out of all of them that I felt meh about.
I liked Booker because he was like kind of like servanty, like subservanty. He was very subby. He had a lot of sub energy, which I really enjoy.
Big sub energy.
Mm-hmm.
I like big dumb energy more, which is my rank.
Sometimes you just gotta type a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was all the questions I had for you. So thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
I hope this satisfied all your monster fucking needs.
I'm sure it satisfied more than enough of Kayla's.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Kinky Ladies Book Club. Next time on the Kinky Ladies Book Club, we will be reading Treble by Rilsey Adams. Treble, consisting of three parts, threefold, a spilled chai tea latte and a swipe to the right, thrust Sadie headfirst into Hendrix and Nova's life. If the Kinky Ladies turned you on, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. and check out our social media. That's Kinky Ladies Book Club on Facebook, Kinky Ladies Podcast on Instagram, and on Twitter, we are Kinky Ladies Pod. You can send us an email at kinkyladiespodcast@gmail.com. And remember, please, we want your book suggestions, not your dick pics.